America, we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. To serve others in ways that promote human flourishing and create a ripple effect of transformation for generations to come. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
Welcome back to the Dirt Show. Before we get to comparing Donald Trump's classification issue with President Biden's classification issue, I just want to go back to the Oscars for just a couple of minutes. Again, you know my views on the Oscars and on Hollywood woke and on the bigotry that was reflected on the floor of the Oscars. I had mentioned that many of the stars, including Ruffalo or others who have been brilliantly anti-Israel over the years, were wearing this bizarre button. I'll show you the button and you can figure out what it is. Really a bizarre button. Here's what it shows. I don't know which way it goes, this way or this way, but it doesn't matter. I think it's this way. Okay, so it's a red hand with a black heart. Now they're claiming, well, you know, it stands for peace. No. Many of the people have said it was a reaction to people who were wearing yellow ribbons. Now, we know what yellow ribbons stand for. Yellow ribbons stand for release the hostages. Well, according to sources, only one person in the entire theater, only one person who was a joint Israeli-American who did Spider-Man stuff was wearing a yellow ribbon, but many were wearing this bizarre red hand. And so there's a big dispute going on now as to what the red hand represents. And many people believe, and I believe, it seems certainly true, that the red hand represents a symbol that the radical Palestinian terrorists have been using since 2020. And that is the symbol that when a group of Palestinians lynched two innocent Israelis, took them and just tore them apart with their hands and their limbs, and one of them took the cell phone and found the wife's number and laughingly said, "I just killed your husband. I just killed your husband." And then they threw the two bodies out the window of the dead Israelis that had been mutilated. And the guy who had killed them went to the window and showed his bloody hand, his red hand. Yes, his red hand. And that is what is thought to be the symbol of the red hand. Now, you know, whenever there's a choice between stupidity and meanness, I think it's always best to err on the side of stupidity, particularly when it comes to Hollywood. And so I'm going to conclude that these useful idiots who were wearing these buttons, including a friend of mine, not going to name them, but they didn't know that they were wearing a symbol of murder and mutilation, a symbol that was much more representative of what Hamas did on October 7th than any effort to get peace. But let's assume they didn't know. Somebody asks you to put on a button, and you look at the button, and you see a red hand, and you see a black heart. Don't you at least ask, well, black heart, that seems a little cruel. Black heart? Who are we accusing of having a black heart? Red hand, that suggests bloody hand. So even if you don't know about the lynching in Ramallah in 2020, you obviously understand the red hand means the bloody hand. Maybe you think it's the bloody hand of Israelis, but at least ask the question. And maybe somebody will honestly respond and tell you that the red hand represents the proud, bloody hand of a man who had just torn a 19-year-old Israeli apart with his bare hands and bragged about it and then threw his body out the window, a preview of what happened on October 7th, 3 years or so earlier. And then, of course, the rest of the evening with that idiot Glazer getting up and renouncing not only his Judaism, but the Judaism of the people who are standing with him and somehow comparing either the occupation or Israel's self-defense with the Holocaust. What an evening. What a disgusting evening, representing the worst of what Hollywood has come to stand for over the years, and what the woke culture has come to stand for over the years. Okay, I got that out of my system. Let's turn now to what happened today. There was a hearing today, and it was an interesting hearing. And Robert Herr is a very bright guy and obviously a good lawyer. And he made his case and managed to offend both sides, which probably means he did a pretty good job. The Democrats obviously wanted him to apologize and say he should never have included anything negative about President Biden's cognitive abilities. And the Republicans wanted him to apologize and say, why did he distinguish the Trump case from the Biden case? Neither got their way. Let me get my way. Legally, I'm not talking about emotionally, politically, legally, it's hard to find a real difference between the Trump case and the Biden case. I'm not talking about obstruction of justice now. That may be a different matter. I'm talking only about the crime of unlawful possessing of classified material. The elements of that crime is that it's classified in both cases. I think there's an agreement that it's classified. In the Trump case, he said, I could have declassified this, but I didn't. And here it is. And in the Biden case, he said in a recorded conversation, I think it's classified. Here's, you know, be careful with it. I think it's classified. So, A, in both cases, there's evidence that the items were classified. B, in both cases, there was evidence that the people holding them, Trump and Biden, knew that they were classified. In both cases, they knew they were classified and nonetheless possessed them. Biden didn't say, oh my God, it's classified. I can't show it to you. Let me immediately return it to the archives. No, he showed it to his ghostwriter, and he made $8 million on the book that the ghostwriter drafted for him using the classified material. So there could be no doubt that Biden knew, under the meaning of know, and you know, I know quite a bit about criminal law, I have to tell you. I've done hundreds of cases involving knowledge, intent, willfulness, all of those criteria. And I can assure you that both cases equally satisfy all the elements of the crime, all the elements of the crime. Now, it's conceivable that a defendant can come in and say, although you have presented proof beyond a reasonable doubt enough to get to the jury that I possessed classified material, knowing it was classified, knowing that I possessed it, I have a defense. My defense was I was old and I forgot and I didn't know. But how does that work? He said he knew it was classified. What, did he forget about it a minute later? It just doesn't work. There is no legal defense there. So what Herr says, well, maybe the jury wouldn't have been satisfied. Well, maybe the jury wouldn't be satisfied in the Trump case either. We don't know. It's not the job of prosecutors to do the job of the jury. The jury does credibility determinations, and there's no credibility determination here. It's an open and shut case. Here, ghostwriter, is material. Be careful. It's classified. That is, don't show it to anybody else. Oh, by the way, I can't read my writing, ghostwriter. Here, you read the classified material, and according to the recording, he turns the classified material. Did he not remember he turned it up? It doesn't matter that he remembers now. That's not the issue. The issue is his state of mind at that time. How can Herr have found one of them not to satisfy the elements? He was stuck because he had made up his mind early, and he was right, by the way. Biden shouldn't be prosecuted. He's made up his mind that Biden shouldn't be prosecuted. He was right. But he had a problem. The problem is that Trump was prosecuted. And so he had to distinguish the cases. The problem is You cannot distinguish the cases. There should not have been a criminal prosecution in either case, because all presidents take home classified material to write their multi-million dollar memoirs. They all do it. I will bet you anything that you go back to the time when presidents started writing memoirs, and you will find that they kept some classified material in order to help them with their memoirs. Maybe they made copies of it. Maybe they took notes of it. Maybe they took the originals home. I don't know, but enough former office holders, particularly presidents, but in Biden's case, vice president and senator, took this material home with them. In Trump's case, at least he had the ability to classify it, declassify it. He didn't do it, but he had the ability. Of course, Biden never had the ability to declassify as a senator or as vice president. And so I just can't see any legal difference. And I have to tell you, I know a lot more about criminal law than the members of Congress, and I suspect than Robert Hurd. There is just no legal difference in terms of the pure elements of the offense. And then you go to, well, maybe he would have a defense. Who knows whether he would take the witness stand? How would he introduce the evidence? Who knows whether the jury would believe him? Remember, Hur found that Biden had misstated the facts. In fact, he was asked by one of the members of Congress, you mean he lied, right? And Hur basically admitted that he had lied. And if he had lied, maybe the jury wouldn't believe him. So maybe the jury wouldn't believe that he didn't know or forgot. But even so, I don't even know why it's relevant whether he forgot, whether he now can't remember. The crime wasn't committed when Hur interviewed Biden for 5 hours. It doesn't matter what he remembers and what he doesn't remember in 2023 or 24, whenever this interview took place. His state of mind is only relevant when he showed the classified material to his ghostwriter. And there's absolutely nothing to suggest that he didn't know what he was doing, that he didn't do it willfully and intentionally. The tapes show exactly the opposite. And so I just don't see how you can distinguish these cases. Now, you can say maybe Trump should have been prosecuted for obstruction of justice if there was evidence that he told people to destroy boxes, to move boxes, to hide boxes. That's a different matter. That's not what was before the committee. The committee, the question was the crime of pure classified material possession. There is no difference. You cannot make any difference. I challenge anybody to find me a legal difference, a legal difference. What the jury would decide, who knows what a jury would decide? They acquitted O.J. Simpson. You know, they acquitted Klaus von Bülow. I'm giving you a list of all my clients. I'm not taking credit for any of that, but juries acquit people that a lot of other people think are guilty. The vast majority of Americans think O.J. Simpson is guilty. The vast majority of people think that Klaus von Bülow was guilty. I'm not going to quarrel with them. I did my job. But who is ever to know what a jury will decide? It depends where the trial is. It depends, you know, all the circumstances. If the trial of Biden took place in the District of Columbia, very likely the jury would want to acquit him and would want to convict Trump. Is that the reason for a special prosecutor to recommend against a prosecuting one and then having many, many pages in his report distinguishing the cases? No, the cases are not distinguishable. You can distinguish the conduct that occurred after the crime. You can distinguish the cooperation, but nobody in America is obligated to cooperate. In America, you're entitled to say to a prosecutor, don't count on my cooperation. I'm not helping you one bit. I'm not doing anything. You prove your case beyond a reasonable doubt. We're enemies now. Don't count on me to be a friend. You want to reduce the sentence? Fine, we'll make a deal. But don't ask me to give up any rights or be nice to you just because I have an obligation as an American. I don't. And so that's not a distinction. If he, in fact, obstructed justice, then you have a different case. But as far as the classified material case itself, the possession of classified material, I challenge any constitutional criminal law scholar, practitioner, to come up with any difference between the two cases. And again, the paradigm of the two cases, the point of evidence in both cases that is most compelling is that in the Trump case, he takes the document and he waves it in front of a journalist who's sitting there with somebody else and says, hey, I could have declassified this. When I was in office, I didn't declassify it. Here, there is a difference. We're not sure Trump actually showed him the document. We're not sure Trump had him read the document. In the Biden case, he says, here, I think this is classified. Be careful. I can't read what I wrote. Here, why don't you read what I wrote? In fact, the case for prosecuting Biden on those facts alone, seems slightly more compelling than the Trump case. I'm not saying this is sufficient difference to justify a different result. No, I think the result should be the same. Both cases, there should not be a criminal prosecution. You know, I'm generally against the weaponization, the criminalization of political and ambiguous conduct. I would rather see the criminal law used less, not more. When you have two situations where you have a double standard, I would resolve the double standard, not by prosecuting both of them, but by prosecuting neither of them. So for me, and of course, Herr didn't have jurisdiction over that. He couldn't have come with a report saying, well, he could have actually, but would have not been within exactly the scope of his responsibility. He could have said, the reason I'm not prosecuting Biden is because I don't think Trump should have been prosecuted. I think both cases are equivalent. They're the same. If Biden is not prosecuted, neither should Trump be prosecuted. He could have said that, but he didn't. He basically said Trump should have been prosecuted. Biden shouldn't have been prosecuted. Or what he said exactly was, look, I didn't have anything to do with the Trump prosecution, but I've reviewed evidence. And here's the difference between the two cases. Doesn't work. That dog won't hunt. There is just no basis in law for distinguishing the two cases. All the elements of the crime of possession of classified material are exactly the same, exactly the same. And so, letter writers, please, if any of you want to come up with a distinction for me, I'd be happy to hear it. Don't come up with a distinction based on the conduct that occurred thereafter. When it was discovered that the classified material, the crime had already been committed in both cases. So I'm not talking about that. You want to go after Donald Trump for obstruction of justice? You know, show me the evidence, show me the facts, show me the law. We'll talk about that. But that's not what we're talking about. And that's not what they were talking about in Congress. That's what the Democrats tried to talk about and shift the subject of conversation to. But in terms of the actual elements of the crime of unlawful possession of classified material, the elements are exactly the same. The evidence is exactly the same. And the legal conclusion should have been exactly the same. In my view, it should have been do not prosecute either of them. Don't know whether Trump will be making those kinds of arguments. There is nothing in the Constitution, as interpreted by the Supreme Court, which gives a defendant the right to dismiss a case just because somebody else who's equivalently guilty wasn't prosecuted. So constitutionally, legally, that may not be a particularly powerful argument, but in terms of prosecutorial discretion, that surely is an argument that's worth making. We'll see what happens. Okay, let's go to letters. Got a lot of letters today. One is interesting. You know, I was railing against the film Zone of Interest. I didn't like it. One of the producers is a friend of mine, so I apologize in advance, but we have different tastes in movies. I just thought it was an extraordinarily boring movie that didn't move at all, as I said. It was an interesting photograph of Rudolf Hess, the commandant of Auschwitz and his family living right next to Auschwitz, and, you know, hearing the screams and hearing the shouts. And but there was no drama. It was a point, an interesting point. Now, it turns out that the point was apparently borrowed from another book that didn't get any credit. So let me read you a letter. I can't confirm that this letter is true. I did check the facts before I read the letter. Here's the letter. So Zone of Interest isn't even original. It's a ripoff of a much better book written half a century ago, 1952. I can't pronounce French, but La Mort est mon métier, which means, I think, death is my business, by Robert Merle. The book is a French classic, the first to examine the banality of evil, dealing with a character based on Rudolf Hess, being commandant of Auschwitz and living next door with his family. This book, the French book, actually does delve into what is going on at the concentration camp and raises how a monster can come home and act like a family man. The Zone of Interest won as a stolen work without acknowledging the original work by Merle is a disgrace. I can't confirm any of that, and I myself wouldn't use the term stolen in art. People borrow. But if it was, in fact, based on that book, it was actually based on another book written after that, and the book could have easily been based on this. So it's a little more complicated, a little bit derivative. But let me tell you, I wouldn't be bragging about it. Look, the movie won an Oscar. Great. The guy who got the director for the best movie was a disgrace. But let the public judge the quality of the movie on its merits. I got a lot of letters saying we liked the movie. We thought it was a good movie. You're not a movie critic. I agree. I'm not a movie critic, so don't take my view personally. But I watch a lot of movies, and both my wife and I were bored out of our gourd watching it, because we just there was no motion. There was no action. There was no point. The point was a photograph. It's interesting. An interesting perspective. The guard living next to the people who were being murdered, but it didn't go anywhere as far as I was concerned. Professor, I was watching the House interview Mr. Herr about his investigation into Biden and his declassified documents. Mr. Herr is not a mind reader and doesn't claim to be. When Biden repeatedly claimed he didn't recall something, how did Herr know he wasn't just saying that to avoid answering the question and still not be accused of perjury? Why didn't Herr recommend Biden to take a cognitive test from a doctor specializing in memory impairments? How could he finish the report without that, or have the conclusion be in his report? It's interesting, but it misses my point. My point is, it doesn't matter. The day after Biden showed these documents, God forbid he could have had a stroke and lost his memory completely and lost his cognitive ability. That wouldn't make him less guilty of the crime. The crime occurred at the moment that Biden showed his ghostwriter these documents, saying that they may be classified. Be careful here. You can read it. That's the only time the mental element matters. So it doesn't matter whether his cognitive abilities are impaired now. And that's why I don't think Herr was right in putting the stuff about cognitive ability in there, because it's not relevant to the elements of the crime. And I don't think anything that occurred at the hearing today made it more relevant, certainly not in my mind as a teacher of criminal law for 50 years who focused on intent so many times in so many cases. I have litigated so many cases involving intent. It makes no sense at all. Sorry. This is about Israel. Has there ever been a war that the country that was attacked was told to somehow not cause innocent people to die, provide aid, stop fighting, blame themselves? There's a bit of a double standard there. Now, obviously, Israel should do everything in its power, and I think it is, to minimize civilian casualties. But when you're fighting an enemy that admittedly, we have the tapes of it, admittedly uses children, babies as human shields, it's a little harder to avoid civilian casualties. I wonder what Spielberg will say about the disgusting guy that calls himself a Jew and rejects his Judaism. Will he ever work with them again? Shame on all of them. My mom is a Holocaust survivor. They could never have imagined to put this experience in this way. Proud to say I don't watch the Oscars, and the professor needs to develop a spine. The man is a jellyfish. I have no spine. That's why my whole life I've gotten into trouble for standing up for things, because I have no spine. Yeah. Good letter. Good letter. My life would have been a lot easier if I didn't have a spine. Let's see. What is... I will believe in DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion over merit when the NFL and the NBA diversify. There's no basis for DEI in any occupation if professional sports are exempted from it. You know, that's an argument I hear from time to time. Nobody would ever want to diversify sports or any competitive contest of any kind. That's pure meritocracy. But then you have to go place by place. There is room for diversity, for example, in Congress. You don't have to be qualified to be in Congress. Who cares who's in Congress? They're not our pilots. They're not a surgeon. You want to send bozos to Congress and you want to do Congress based on ethnicity and DEI, I couldn't care less. But when it comes to occupations that can affect our lives, sitting in an airplane, sitting on the surgeon's table, having an architect build a building, you would think that meritocracy would be at least as important as it is in the NBA and the NFL. But as you know, diversity doesn't mean diversity. It just means more blacks. That's all it means. That's all it's ever meant. More blacks or more of any other group that you want to diversify with. It has nothing to do with actual diversity. It has nothing to do with diversity of points of view. It has nothing to do with, and how do you measure diversity? The Russians know how to do it. They said the number of people admitted to college has to be exactly proportional to the percentage of people of that race or background or religion in the society. So Jews were 0.1% in Russia, so they got 0.1%. Ukrainians were 6%, you know, this, were that, and that. If you want to do that, if you want to just go purely, then don't tell us that you're producing people based on merit. If you're not admitting students based on meritocracy, don't give us your output and say hire our people because they're meritocratically the best. They're not. If you haven't picked them based on the criteria of the best, you're not going to turn them into the best in a four-year period. As somebody once said about Harvard, the only important office in Harvard is the admissions office, because that determines the nature and the quality of the people who are in the university, and the university can't do that much to ruin them in 4 years. So for the most part, they go out as they came in. Hopefully a good education turns people around. In my case, it changed my life, my education at Brooklyn College, free education at a university that was purely meritocratic. Everything was done with blind grading. All admissions were done based on exams and grades, and there was any interview or anything like that. Okay, this is an interesting one. Don't listen to these people telling you to vote Trump. I get probably 100 emails a day. How can you vote for Biden? You have to vote for Trump. I don't know who to vote for. I'm going to wait until the end to see. Professor, don't listen to these people who tell you to vote Trump. You are extremely well-respected, and people on the right should be happy that people like you are finally seeing these crazy people and calling them out. The left is worth saving. Yeah, I think the center left is worth saving. The extreme left is not worth saving. And I would never vote for a woke candidate, a candidate of the extreme left, a candidate who is intolerant of free speech. But of course, the next question is, why do you keep voting woke? I never vote woke. I have never voted for a woke candidate. Now, I have voted for candidates who then turned out to be woke, but not something I myself would ever do deliberately. Dershowitz, the firefighters who booed, remember we had this issue, the firefighters are government employees. I've often been told that government employees do not have full freedom of speech rights. Your thoughts? You're absolutely right. They don't have full freedom of speech. They could have said at this event, there is no freedom of speech at all. You can't clap. You can't boo. You can't show approval. You can't show disapproval. You have to behave like you're in a courthouse. You can't approve the verdict. You can't disapprove the verdict. But what they can't say is you're government officials. Therefore, you can show approval of the government, but you can't show disapproval. You cannot do that under the First Amendment. I have an article, an op-ed in today's New York Sun, which deals with the firefighters' case, as well as with Sid in the Morning, Sid Rosenberg's case, where he was expelled from the floor of the House because he shouted out, "Says who?" The typical Brooklyn expression that we all learned as kids. Anytime anybody ever said anything to us that we doubted, it was always, "Says who? Says who? Says you? Says who?" And that's what Sid yelled out. He should be commended for that. He's printing shirts, and I'm going to get one of the first copies of the shirt. And one of these days, I will wear it on the show when I get it. And if you have any doubt about that, you can ask me, "Says who? Says me? That's who?" See you tomorrow.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.